And now.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity. We're presented by Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. Find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio at Herbal Essence. And Connor Clark at C underscore Clark underscore 27. So, good story in The Athletic by Scott Docterman, laying out some of the storylines for 2023 in the Big Ten. First things first, get through signing day 2.0 for Nebraska tomorrow. See what spring ball looks like with the new coaching staff, the new additions, what attrition exists, and what's the health of Casey Thompson quarterback-wise on top of what kind of wow Sims can bring you. Obvious take, the offensive line's got to make strides. Defensively, can you figure out roles for the talent you've brought in and the talent you've retained? But 2023 should be pretty interesting as we go down the list. And you've had this happen in Big Ten football every year. Somebody's emerged and somebody's fallen flat on their face. The team that's really fallen off since they've hit the mountaintop, and that is getting to a conference title, two times in 4 years, is Northwestern. They are 4-20 in their last couple of seasons.
They're just a team that doesn't quite seem to fit into this NIL era.
No, and the thing about Northwestern, we'll get to Nebraska, I promise, they lose 9 portal guys per one they gain because of their admission standards. Is Michigan a team that can finally, listen, they've been to the playoffs in back-to-back years, and they handed it to TCU. I don't know that they touch Georgia. I don't think they do. Hell of a lot more competitive than that title game. But they're going to have McCarthy, and they're going to have Corum back, and they've rebuilt. They've done well on the lines of scrimmage, and they've kept guys in the program. It's not that they don't have portal or losses, but their lines of scrimmage are really pretty good, and they've made some key additions via the portal per the line of scrimmage the last couple of years. So Ohio State seems very, or I should say Michigan seems pretty steady. What happens with Ohio State? They still are talented. They still have Travion at running back. They still have Starvin Marvin Jr. Okay,
who could be the best wide receiver
he's
in the country.
Just incredible, and he showed it as a freshman, and they're still going to be good defensively.
But what do they do at quarterback?
Right, Stroud's been
Which five-star do they go to
now?
Yeah,
they're going to have somebody.
No, I know, but what they've had and what's stepped in has been pretty seamless.
We're talking just back-to-back what was a top-10 pick and most likely a future top-10 pick, or at least top-20 pick in C.J. Stroud. You never know what happens around draft season, especially with the quarterbacks, but I think it's a pretty safe bet that if not top 10, he's going to be top 15.
Sure, and I think he goes 5, honestly. So you have that. Penn State, listen, Penn State quit fooling around, and they have a running game. They have Nick Singleton and Catron Allen both combining for 22 rushing touchdowns. So when push came to shove, Penn State had a clear identity. They've always had dudes on the defensive side of the ball. So are they ready to get back into that conversation for the East or the greater Big Ten? They've not been able to beat Michigan or Ohio State, right? That's been their Achilles heel. Otherwise, 11-2, what they did to Utah was impressive. We turn to Nebraska right now, and, you know, is Nebraska one of those teams that rises this year? Because of where they're at, the zip code they live in, who they have now as head coach, and is it really just a situation where they can put it together? Let's go back. 2019, that it team was Minnesota. 11-2, they rose up. And they've kind of stayed in that conversation at least for a West Division crown. In 2020, you had Northwestern really bump up and win the West. COVID was really weird. In 2021, you had
Michigan. You explain that away. Northwestern wins West. Well, COVID was weird.
They were good.
They did it twice.
They've done it twice. Northwestern's put guys into the NFL. Mm-hmm. They have.
The 2010s was really their decade of being it, I guess. Like, for their standard.
Yeah.
I mean, they won bowl games. They won 10 games multiple times.
And they climbed up, and they've kind of revisited that. Now they've had too much tequila.
Yeah.
and they are trying to crawl out of the bar right now. For Nebraska, though, can Nebraska be a version of that team that just kind of comes out of nowhere? Sparty did it in 2021, 11-2, and then last season, Maryland was pretty impressive at 8-5 in the East, and then you had Illinois finish at 8-5, but they were close to 9 or more this year. Iowa has the 130th ranked offense while they're getting an infusion in a couple of Michigan transfers. They had a defense that held 9 teams to 10 points or less. They're going to have to reload there. They're losing some special people. So I'm saying Iowa's not going to be what they've been, a West Division champ until Nebraska showed up. Purdue, coaching change, and Brohm is special, whatever you think of the guy. They're 2 years removed from 9-4, okay, mm-hmm. with 2 top 5 wins. So I guess my take here is, why can't it be Nebraska? I guess the detractor is it's year one. In year one, that'd be a tough ask. But I think Purdue's going to step back. I think Illinois will be okay. They're only going to get better. I think Northwestern with a new coordinator, it may take a couple of years. I think Iowa will probably be better just because they'll have better talent at quarterback, but their defense won't be as, theoretically, as we talk in almost February, as good. And then Minnesota. I think Minnesota's gettable despite what they've been. They've just seemed to reload with a team that can win you 7 or 8 ball games. So Nebraska, to me, is a team that you can look out for, and it's okay to think about. Let's talk after spring before we say it out loud. Is that team in the West that's due to rise? If I'm putting my money right now, based on the 5-star quarterback in the running game, I think Penn State could maybe get Ohio State next year just because of the quarterback question with Ohio State. And then I think Michigan is still your class of the Big Ten. But who rises, who falls? I'm interested right now to hit some of these storylines with it because, you know, for lack of a better term, by default, because of the division you're in, as wide open as it's been, I think you have a good shot with the talent you have, the talent you keep, and the head coach you brought in if you're Nebraska.
Well, I personally think that there's a most interesting storyline in the Big Ten for the first 6 games of the season and a different one for the last 6 games of the season. And when I look at the first 6, I actually think it's what does year one look like for Matt Rhule in Nebraska and how does that look compared to Luke Fickell in Wisconsin. I think that's your number one storyline in the Big Ten through the first 6 weeks of the season. Because you look at the Big Ten East and you mentioned it, Schmitty, like through 6 weeks, realistically, Michigan should be 6-0. Ohio State should be 6-0.
Penn State's right somewhere.
The question is then, who is that third team in the Big Ten East that maybe can give one of those 2 teams a run for their money? Is it going to be Penn State with the talent they have? Is it going to be Tagovailoa and Maryland with Coach Locksley? Are they going to be continuing their rise next year? Are they going to be the team that maybe puts a scare into Michigan or Ohio State? That's your East storyline for the first 6 games, and like really, that's not that exciting. For the last 6 games, it comes down to, all right, Michigan, Ohio State, who's going to be the Big Ten representative in the college football playoff? That's what the storyline has been for probably 3 years now. It's going to continue that way next year. So that's going to dominate the final 6 weeks. But through the first 6 weeks, you look at it, with the way that Fickell and Rhule were each brought into their respective stops and the type of message they're bringing to each school, I think that's your most interesting storyline in the Big Ten. If not the Big Ten as a whole, at least the Big Ten West. What does Fickell look like trying to change what Wisconsin is, take them from what they've been, what's made them successful dating way back to Alvarez to now? All right, well, they're going to go, can't call it fun and gun, but it's closer to that than it ever has been.
Air raid and wide open.
Air raid, wide open, quick offense, no huddle. Like, that's a big change for Wisconsin. What does that look like the first 6 weeks? And then what does this Matt Rhule bring Nebraska back to its roots look like through the first 6 games of the season? Because these are 2 hires that are always going to be tied at the hip. Everyone's going to compare Matt Rhule in Nebraska to Luke Fickell in Wisconsin. That's just the way it goes with the timing of those hires, with the high-profile nature of those hires, with the assumption that, you know what, if Nebraska wanted Luke Fickell, they could have made a run at Luke Fickell, but they at least we can assume, didn't, based on what we've heard from Trev and Matt Rhule, that Matt Rhule was the number one guy
for
Nebraska.
It's on the radar, I'm sure, but they liked Rhule better.
Yeah. So what does Wisconsin look like through those first 6 weeks, and what does Nebraska look like through those first 6 weeks? Because that is just so intrinsically tied together, these 2 schools now, at least for the next 2 to 3 years, is which school is rising, which school is falling. Are they both rising? I doubt it. I don't think Nebraska is going to be able to go much further south than they have been.
It can be Nebraska and Wisconsin contending for the West, but that means Minnesota and Iowa, one of those 2 – got a step back, and with this this facelift for Wisconsin, that this could be their Bill Callahan moment, where you change your identity and what you've known to go to something new with this wide open offense. Fickle knows ball, though, so I don't.
It could be their Clemson Dabo Sweeney moment. Dabo really brought Clemson into the 21st century with what the changes he made there. Not like,
very fair.
I don't think that's what Fickell does at Wisconsin, just because how ingrained in Wisconsin
that is. He's just waiting for Ohio State, though.
You talk about environment and, yeah, the potential future of Fickell. I don't think it's a Dabo Sweeney situation, but it could be. It could be that Luke Fickell is the guy that brings Wisconsin into the 21st century and says, you know what, NIL, we're going to embrace it. An offense that's going to be appealing to the types of athletes that want to go on to the NFL, we're going to change into that and try to bring more talent here. That all remains to be seen, and Wisconsin could go either way.
I think the most important number for me right now over the offseason, especially for Rhule and going into the Big Ten season as maybe that it team, as you talked about, is two. And that's the first two games, obviously. Mm. Minnesota, Colorado. I don't think, I mean, you mentioned comparing the first six games for Fickell and Rhule together, Elijah. I think you could do that maybe in the first two for Rhule, especially because if you lay an egg in weeks one and two, obviously it's not over,
no.
But it's that much harder to get.
I've seen this movie before.
Exactly.
What the hell?
Exactly. But it's at the same time, it's so hard to tell because it's under a different regime. Now, if it was the same thing, I'd be like, well, that's why. But now it's even harder to tell. So I think the first two games could be in that storyline between Fickell and Rhule. Say if Rhule wins those first two games, and I don't want to get ahead of myself, but if he does, that would look really good for Nebraska being that it team.
You're off to a, dare I say it, unbeaten start. I mean, Nebraska's never gotten out of the gate and got downhill the last 100 years. I mean, think about it. I'm exaggerating.
Michigan looms. That's the only problem. Well,
fine. You get some momentum built up for that moment.
You probably date back to that year two under Riley where they started out the year, I believe it was
7-0. That was the last time.
It didn't feel like a convincing 7-0. Every game felt like you were on the edge of your seat up until like 2 minutes left. And you go, okay, well, Nebraska's going to pull this one out by three or by five.
I mean,
or whatever.
Just what? Think about it. What kind of tenure can you start with here? Riley, you're losing the Hail Mary to BYU. Frost, the game gets canceled by the good Lord. Okay, then Colorado beat you at the buzzer. Can Rhule kind of snap that streak of tough starts? We'll continue on to Hail Varsity presented by Currency.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity presented by Currency. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbal, Connor Clark. Does Nebraska move up in the Big Ten West hierarchy for 2023? We're chewing on that a bit. You got a little bit of news on Junior here, Sam Hoiberg.
Yeah, Sam Hoiberg slides into the starting lineup. So that's interesting.
I'm all right with that. With the rebounding. Yeah, with the rebounding and the hustle. And not that Tominaga isn't trying, but let's just say his forte is coming off the bench and getting to the rim and getting under the opponent's skin and hitting some threes.
I'll just say you heard that news first from Elijah Herbal in our interview with Andy Markowski, thanks to an assist from Connor Clark
before
the show.
Geez.
And he was sitting there like,
have to ultimately give an assist to somebody else because I didn't come up with that myself. But.
Well, you didn't dial up Fred real quick?
I wish I could. I wish I had that ability.
I texted some sources too, let it be known. And by some sources, I mean one that wasn't named Connor Clark. Mm. And I got, it could happen. And I went, let's roll with it. Let's see what Andy has to say.
We're talking about moving up in the Big Ten in Nebraska's prospects to do so. It could come together. The question about it, too, is the learning curve. Coach Rhule's been very upfront. Hey, we got to learn how to win in the league here. I'm paraphrasing from his press conference, but that learning curve could be fierce. You've got players you've recruited for the league here on the offensive and defensive line. Can they deliver? There's program transition with Minnesota and their offensive coordinator. Meanwhile, Rutgers has Kirk Siraca heading to Piscataway. Jeff Brohm is gone. Ryan Walters is a new head coach. Sparty signed 12 in the portal, lost 14 Indiana signed 14, lost 20. Indiana's really struggling. They're one of those it teams during COVID that finished in the top 10. And there's just a lot of mystery here with the league, but you do have teams that can be relevant for the first time in a while in November, and you do have teams that can kind of break the door down into the top 25 a la Illinois last year.
And you mentioned Indiana, their COVID season. I feel like that's the one where you can say, yeah, COVID was weird. Like, less Northwestern, more Indiana.
Yeah, I agree.
Indiana was the weird one where I went.
They'd been on the verge. I mean, they've been a 6-7 win team, but they go from 7 to 8-2 in COVID, and they kind of get hosed out of a New Year's Day bowl, but they beat Penn State. Penix was incredible and healthy. They scared Ohio State a little bit.
I mean, it's a good team, don't get me wrong, but I don't think in a normal season that's an Indiana team that's going and competing with Ohio State for the Big Ten East.
Well, I think the main argument that you could have between Northwestern and Indiana that year is that Northwestern's defense was, like, historically good. Mm-hmm. And they beat a Justin Fields Ohio State team that put up, what, 47 on Clemson in the college football playoff that year. And I know that's just one game, but it was a high-powered offense. I mean, Nebraska saw
12-27 throwing the ball.
Right.
Fields had nowhere to go.
Yeah, so I think that the legitimacy of Northwestern's COVID year was a lot more than Indiana. Now, Indiana did lose Michael Penix, and he's still balling out in Washington right now. But mm-hmm. I think that Northwestern team, just from top to bottom, was a little bit better.
Kalen DeBoer was a big loss, too, after COVID.
Well, one thing to discuss when we look ahead at this this upcoming season, though, in the storylines, is we were talking about Wisconsin and Nebraska, Matt Rhule, Luke Fickell being tied at the hip. September 9th is going to be very, very interesting with Wisconsin heading off to Washington. They take on Washington State the same day that Nebraska heads out to Boulder and takes on Colorado. And based in recent years, I think Washington State is the slightly better team than Colorado. They're nothing to sneeze at. But also, Colorado's had themselves a decent offseason. They're going to have an influx of talent. It'll be young talent, but there will be talent there. And it's two Big Ten teams with new head coaches on the road taking on Pac-12 foes. And I think that's just going to be very interesting to see, you know, what does year one look like for each of these teams. We're going to have a very, very good barometer early in the season with each of these teams. I think they're, from matchup stylistically to just what each team was last year to what they are now, I think those are both very, very good tests for each Nebraska and Wisconsin.
You've gone SEC shopping, and you see, and you'll see if the stars really do shine and live up to the talent of what these kids were out of high school after a year or two at a Florida, at a Georgia, at an A&M. I mean, on that defensive side of the ball, you saw the pop you got from Mickey's portal haul from the Big 12 and LSU last year when the offense was good and clicking, and you had enough time to make a play downfield. I mean, it was pretty prolific. It had its moments. Now you need to have the run game have more moments. Greg in Michigan emails in, chris@halevarsity.com. I know it's Kool-Aid season, but what Searle said the other day about the 3-3-5 concerns me in the Big Ten. He said it was built to stop offenses in the Pac-12 and Big 12, so to jump 50 spots seems a little stout to me.
let's also remember, though, not to completely disagree with Searles, but they were designed to stop offenses in the Pac-12 and the Big 12, but that was in the 90s, whenever offenses in the Pac-12 and the Big 12 looked drastically different than they do today. So let's also keep that in mind. Yeah, these were designed to stop Pac-12 offenses, but USC in 1997 looked a hell of a lot different than USC in 2023. Well,
even then, too, it's going to be modified for the Big Ten in order to stop. I think it would be foolish if it wasn't, and this coaching staff will most certainly modify it. And yeah, to your point, Elijah, that was a long time ago now in the 90s, which is kind of weird to say, but definitely a different style of 3-3-5 than what it was.
And I'll also note that, I mean, a lot of coaches, the second time I've said today, but a lot of coaches we've talked to that I have a lot of respect for say it's not about the X's and the O's, it's about the Jimmies and the Joes. And that I do truly believe is that, you know what, with good enough talent, with good enough athletes, they'll go out and execute whatever defensive scheme you put in front of them. Now, there is something to lining up a scheme with the players that you have and putting guys in roles that are going to make them even better than they actually are. But the Jimmies and the Joes are the ones who go out and play football, not the scheme, not the X's and the O's. So do you trust the talent that Matt Rhule and Coach White are bringing in on the defensive side of the ball? That's a bigger question to me than what does the 3-3-5 look like. It comes down to the talent that you have to put into a 3-3-5 defense.
I'm all about the chaos plays where in White's defense, and you saw Syracuse do this to Minnesota's run game. I mean, they had 30 carries for 79 yards. It's quite frankly shocking that Minnesota won that game. They did it through special teams, a couple of returns, and that was your difference from a field position standpoint. But you're having tackles for loss on that dream of a second and five, right? You get a good gain running the football on first down. You're second and six, second and five. Up here's a loss of two from one of your guys in that 3-3-5. You didn't know where he was coming from, and now it's third and eight. So it all, the math ends up third and eight a lot of times, at least you're hoping. And then the emphasis, guys, on the pass rush and to go get the quarterback, that's been an emphasis at Temple. That's been an emphasis at Baylor. That's an emphasis right now for Nebraska to go get the quarterback. And they're talking, what, 40 sacks a season. Nebraska led the nation Jay Moore's senior year where they had 55 with that defense back in 06. So Nebraska, no stranger to having guys and get off the edge, go get the quarterback and really pressure a pass-happy league and a pass-happy world of college football. Big Ten still more meat and potatoes with the run game, but push comes to shove. You got to go create some negative plays on defense. That's an emphasis.
And let's be clear. Bo Pelini's 4-3 got gashed on the ground plenty in the Big Ten. Like, all defenses are going to get gashed.
Post 2010, it did.
Whenever you go up against 320-pound maulers from Wisconsin, like, sometimes the scheme doesn't matter. It's just these guys are better than you, and like, you've seen it before with Nebraska. So I can't wait for that day whenever Nebraska gets gashed on the run and all the talking heads in Nebraska go, well, it's the 3-3-5.
Well, don't turn the football over. Go score some points in the red zone and help the defense. We'll wind out a Tuesday next.